Thanks for listening to the podcast. Stay connected on Facebook/ IFBB Ben PAK fan page, on Twitter at IFBB Ben PAK, and of course, BenPokulski.com.
All right, what's up, everybody? Ben Pokulski and John Meadows coming back at you with another podcast, Muscle Expert Style. John, what's going on, buddy? Always a pleasure to chat, and tell me what's going on with your life.
Well, it's been everything's going so well in the last 2 weeks. It's kind of like, you know how people use that analogy that, you know, life's kind of ups and downs. This will definitely be an up time right now. I've had some really cool stuff happen in the last couple weeks. Definitely the most notable. I get an opportunity to train with Tom Platts November the 8th through the 11th. So he was a guy that really influenced me heavily through the years. And I just had a tremendous amount of respect for him. Not only just the way he trained and some of the things he did in bodybuilding, but just the way he handled himself. You know, I was probably 14 years old, somewhere in that ballpark. And they had just opened a world gym here in Columbus. I didn't live here at the time, but my football coach at the time was pretty supportive. He knew I was, crazy about lifting weights back then at that age. So he brought me up to the seminar of Tom's, and it was pretty cool. I mean, I remember to this day all the details. I remember him pulling up in a limo, and I remember him walking in with a Diet Coke in his hand, and, you know, we start talking, and, you know, he's talking about, you know, fast and slow twitch muscle fibers, and then he starts talking about Golgi tendon organs and stretching, and then he starts talking about sarcoplasmic reticulum, and I'm just thinking, man, this guy's he's really intelligent. He's he knows his business. And so I was always impressed by him. And I'm just absolutely thrilled to be able to go out there and spend 4 days with him. So,
man, I bet. Any young bodybuilder, that's a dream come true, especially, you know, myself as well, being a leg freak. Is he going to let you video it? Are you guys going to make some videos? Or what's exactly the plan, do you know?
Well, here's what I'm hoping happens, and I think it will. I'm hoping that I get to periodically go out there and spend some time with him, at least leading up until the Masters Nationals next year. I'm hoping I get to go out there and make, like, maybe every 6 to 8 weeks. I'm pretty sure that's going to happen unless he decides I'm a turd and he doesn't want to deal with me. We seem to have, you know, gotten off to a really good start, and I think he senses the respect I have for him and the kind of person I am. So, you know, the first trip out there, I really want to be in the moment and focus on the moment, and I don't know that I'm really going to have much training-wise or footage-wise. I realize there's some pretty cool stuff that can happen business-wise from this, but that's kind of secondary. My primary reason is I get to meet and train with my hero, and it's a personal thing to me. And but as he gets to know me, and, you know, the other thing is I don't want him to think I'm out there trying to build my name via him. You know, that's sure. Not what I'm trying to do. That's not what I'm trying to do. So I want to get to know him, and so he can see the kind of person I am. And then, you know, if we get to know each other, do some videos and things like that, cool. But I'm not gonna rush that process. So we'll see. I'll probably get some, but, you know, subsequent trips, it'll probably be, you know, more and more as we go.
Man, that sounds awesome. I don't think, I mean, he may view it differently. You may view it differently, but I think it's just because he doesn't speak a lot. He doesn't like give a lot of his information. He doesn't, you know, kind of interact with the community so much. People just want to hear what he's got to say, you know, and I mean, you know, the conversation between you two would be, you know, priceless, I think, as, you know, an intelligent guy and an intelligent guy who are both passionate about training. I mean, it wouldn't be a means of improving your career. It'd just be a means of, like, informing everybody about some pretty awesome stuff that's going on. Just like when you and I talk, I mean, at the end of the day, it's not to necessarily improve your career or improve my career. It's just like, let's get two smart guys together and talk about stuff that people value and stuff that we value and talk about cool stuff that's going on. And people like to listen. So hopefully he allows you guys to create some videos or even an audio or something. That'd be really badass. I mean, I've loved you guys since I was 14 as well. I remember the first picture I saw, I put it on my wall and I would stare at it at night, and that was my dream, you know? So,
yeah.
I mean, like yourself, I'm sure. Yeah, man. So I'm super excited for you. That's, amazing and incredible. And I actually had the opportunity to chat with Tom for the first time last year at the Olympia. We had corresponded via email in the past, and I spoke with his wife, but I never got to speak with him in person. I get to speak with him in person at the Olympia last year just for about 5 minutes and just let him know how grateful I was for his inspiration, even though he didn't know he was inspiring me. So many pictures, so many videos. Just like, man, you're the greatest. You're the guy who we aspire to as far as leg training, at least. I let him know that, and we chatted for a little bit, and super nice gentleman. And hopefully I'll get to correspond with him again in the future as well.
Hey, it's fun. When you talk to him, you get the sense that he almost, I don't think he knows how respected he is by a lot of the guys today, the guys in our era. It wasn't just back then, it's people now. And, I think he's a really humble guy, but in speaking with him, I definitely got the impression that he doesn't know how, I guess, longstanding his legendary status is. And those of us who like to train hard and have been around, today's generation, we actually do still look up to him a lot. And that's pretty cool, when your legendary status can live on decade after decade, that says something. That's leaving a mark, and that's something that you and I have talked about, things that we want to do in the sport. I don't think our discussion revolved around titles. It revolved around leaving a mark and doing something good and that kind of thing. So really cool.
Yeah, definitely, man. I mean, to be a pioneer like Tom was, for you and I to do it, I mean, it may just be the idea of creating the intelligent movement in bodybuilding, like I suggested to you that you and I were already doing. Over the last 20 years, the intelligent aspect has been neglected a lot for the most part. So you and I are kind of trying to maybe start that movement, along with a number of other people, I'm sure, but you and I have a unique platform because we – we're walking the walk as much as we're talking the talk. So to start that intelligent platform and that intelligent movement for people to actually take a smart scientific approach with some validation behind it to building muscle, that's, I think, where we have our value, and that's where we can transcend our lives and ourselves, which is a pretty cool opportunity, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. So as far as what's going on with myself, nothing as cool as you, unfortunately. I'm actually just getting into training for the Arnold, man. I'm 18 weeks out, and as much as the Olympia's just finished, for most people, I get to start my Arnold prep because I'm so adamant and so focused on winning that damn thing. Literally everything I think about now, everything I think about when I wake up and go to bed is revolving around that. It's the first thing I want to do. It's at the forefront of my mind. It's the biggest thing. It's kind of like you give a bloodthirsty bear a little taste of blood, and you give him second place, and now he's like, okay, now it's on. I got to bring my A game. I'm extremely excited. My training is getting better and better, especially since training with you at the Olympia. My body feels great. My joints are feeling great. My training is just starting to escalate, and hopefully it continues to do so until the show. We've got 18 weeks, so I got about 16 weeks of hard training ahead. So I'm really, really looking forward to just doing that. I'm also releasing another online program beginning of November. My original program is called MI40. This one is going to be the 2.0 version. And it's really based around science. I mean, the nutrition, the training, everything. For any of you who have watched my YouTube videos, just like trying to teach you guys the optimal way to exercise. That's kind of I've kind of made that my thing, is teaching people how to move. Because I think I get it. I think, everyone kind of gets something in life, and that's kind of what I get. Is I don't get it. I mean, there's obviously people out there who are smarter than me, but as far as being able to teach people the optimal way to move and the optimal way to create tension in their muscle, I think it's kind of my niche. It's kind of my forte. So I try to teach people as much as I can and pass on that knowledge.
Well, you know, I told my wife last night, actually. I said we were talking about who the next person is that's going to come and stay with us. I mean, we really enjoy having people. You know, Ken Jackson was just here a couple of days, which, by the way, that dude is strong. He's incredibly strong.
Yeah.
But so we were talking about the next person that's going to come here and hang out with us. And I said, well, you know, probably be Ben. And I said, and what's really cool is he has a legitimate shot at winning the Arnold Classic. And someday I'm going to be able to look back and say, hey, this is pretty cool. This guy that won the Arnold Classic was a friend of mine. He came in here and he hung out with us. So that was a pretty cool conversation we had last night about you.
Thanks, man. And you know what? Hopefully you can be a big part in helping me win that. I mean, you know, as well as anybody, it's not a one-person sport as much as it is at the end of the day. It's a team thing. Like, without support and without, you know, you motivating me and giving your advice, I'll never be able to do it. I'd never be able to get there. So, you know, I look forward to being able to work a little more closely with you and get some crazy training sessions in up there in Columbus at Elite FPS with Dave. Man, that'll be a dream come true for me. I mean, I've been reading about both of you guys for years, and you know, even back in my powerlifting days when I started out in bodybuilding, just wanted to get strong because I thought it was cool. And this is my dream. So I'd like to, just as much as almost you want to go out and train with Tom Platz, I want to come there and train with you and Dave Tate. So definitely looking forward to that. So that seems like a pretty good segue into. Let's talk about leg training, man. I think, you know, seeing as we're talking about lifting heavy ass weight and training with Tom Platz, what better thing to talk about than leg training? So how about thinking about it conceptually, like how to progress from, you know, beginner status to having some substantial leg development to having the best legs in the world, like yourself and like, you know, some people say that I have. What would you think is, you know, where should people start, and what's the best way to progress? And what would you teach somebody who came to you and said, hey, I want to build my legs? What would be the first thing you taught?
Well, when I look back at my history, and I actually started squatting when I was probably 12 years old, the core of my leg workouts was, I mean, basically all I did for the first 5-6 years was I squatted, and then I did leg presses, and then I did leg curls. And I kept it really basic, and I had some powerlifters at one point in my life helped me a little bit with what they thought was good form. And I had my bodybuilding form too. But the main thing that I would tell a beginner is you've got to learn how to squat. And, you know, for the life of me, I don't know why people are so anti-leg press. It's a great exercise. You can target many different areas of your legs by your foot position, you know, high or low on the plate, you know, medium or wide stance. I think it's a great movement. and then something for hamstrings. What I eventually gravitated to I looked a little bit more at the sequence of exercises, and I think you know now that I like to do more hamstring work while I'm fresh, also as a primer to kind of get my hips and knees feeling good for quads. But I think, you know, from my perspective, Ben, it's squats, leg presses, and a leg curl or a stiff-legged deadlift. I mean, if you do those four movements as a beginner, you know, you're going to be in pretty good shape. You know, you can not worry about the lunges and the leg extensions and the sissy squats and all that stuff. I wouldn't have a beginner do that kind of stuff.
I completely agree, man. As people try to get too fancy, you know, even with upper body training, they're trying to get fancy doing these little isolation exercises. And at the end of the day, you need to learn basics. And I think you and I are a perfect complement to each other, because your view is, well, you need to learn these four exercises. And my view is, yes, you need to learn these four exercises, but even before that, you need to learn how to create tension in a muscle. Because at the end of the day, going through this movement may not be, I mean, it's extremely important, or maybe it's before, or maybe it's after learning the movement. Regardless, you need to learn to create tension in the muscle. And most people go through their entire bodybuilding career never conceptualizing that. And that's kind of the thing that I like to teach people, is learn to create tension where you want to place it, as opposed to, you know, just going through a squat for the sake of going through a squat, which, yes, theoretically will build your legs, but it's not to the same level as if you're actually consciously creating tension the way you want to create tension. So, you know, learn to create tension at the extremes is the way that I teach it. So the extremes of the range, way at the bottom, way at the top. You can learn to contract those muscles at the bottom of the range and at the top of the range. Your progress should be exponential, and your joints should stay a lot more stable because it's, you eliminate the inertia at the extremes, that bounce.
Right.
And this is the thing that you run into with everybody, right? Is that, you know, they're going to bounce. Oh, squats really hurt my knees. Well, of course they do. Look at the way you're doing them. You know, squats are not bad for your knees. Bad squats are bad for your knees. So these are the things I try to teach to everybody from step one is, like, you know, create tension and working muscle before you move. So get yourself into a proper position and create tension there and allow that to initiate the movement. So, I mean, I think that would be the first thing I thought I taught to a beginner. You know, really anybody who goes in the gym, especially women, I mean, which is, you know, women, you know, they're afraid of weights, things, learn to create tension. Once they learn that, they're all, like, blown away with the results they get. And any guys, I mean, I've taken guys and put four inches on their legs in 6 or 8 weeks just by going, hey, well, stop doing this inertia crap and start trying this. And as soon as, it takes a few weeks for it to click. But once it clicks, it's, like, revolutionary. So you apply any of that stuff to your training, man, or? And I'm like, obviously, I'm sure you do, but manipulating where you place the tension?
Well, you know, one of the things that I have people do is 3-second eccentrics. And my goal in slowing down the movement is to do exactly what you're saying. It's to create tension and kill the inertia in the movement. And really, you can apply that with anything, but a movement like a squat is extremely beneficial. You know, you've got a lot bigger load and you know, that's kind of my number one teaching point. I will tell you this, though, Ben. It's been a long time since I've worked with beginners. And the concepts that we use with beginners, you know, the 3-second eccentrics and all that stuff, are also still great concepts for very advanced people. I'll notice sometimes I'm starting to, hey, you know what, maybe I rushed that. I didn't get the full effect from that set. So sometimes I got to tell myself this stuff over and over. You know, hey, slow it down. Don't get sloppy. Make every set count. You're, you know, you got to extend your career at this point. You're getting old. So, but, you know, I like the 3-second eccentric piece. I know you have some focus on that.
Yep.
You know, does it need to be 2, 3, 4 seconds? That's debatable. The key is just, can you feel the muscle do what it's supposed to do and create a lot of mechanical tension? I mean, and that's the key. And I've taken a lot of national-level guys and put an inch or two in their legs, you know, in 6 months. And all I did in some of the cases was have them slow down their squats and boom. You know, it's like, oh, wow. And same thing on leg press. And that's where, you know, bands can kind of – come in handy too. You know, if you're doing like a banded leg press, you get this eccentric overload, and if you fight it on the way down when it's pulling against you, man, that's a tremendous amount of eccentric tension. And I mean, to the point where you have to be careful or it's too much,
right?
So
I love that exercise, man. I've been doing that for a while now, and nothing's better. I mean, it's just continuous tension. It never lets up. It just aches and burns and it happens right away. You know, sometimes when you're training legs, it takes 4 or 5 sets for you to really get that crazy, crazy burn. But with the banded leg press, it's like it happens immediately. Love it.
I was experimenting with those 3 or 4 years ago, and maybe you've noticed this, maybe you haven't, but I got great results. And then what I did was I went overboard with it, and you know, it would work great for anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks. And then I was like, I'm not taking these bands off of leg press. And then I noticed, like, week 7, 8, 9, my knees started hurting a little. My quad sweep started going down. So and then I got reports from a couple of my people that were doing it at the time. They're like, you know, I'm starting to get a little achy. And so I pulled back at that point, and you know, I just based on what I've seen and the people that I've worked with, that it seems like bands are awesome, but it's one of those double-edged swords where, you know, you're probably good to do it in cycles. You know, 4 to 6 weeks is plenty. 6 weeks sounds like a lot to me now. But something like, you know, 4 or 5 weeks seems pretty good for making some solid gains, but then you kind of have to back off of it. So,
yeah, so just something, you know, that's actually great that you said that, because I feel the exact same thing, but I experienced it with my upper body. So I experienced it with pressing. You know, I discovered band pressing in university, so over 10 years ago. And I did it for a while, and it worked extremely well. And then I kind of lost it for, you know, maybe 5 or 6 years, and then I brought it back. And I just loved it so much, and the way it felt in my chest and my shoulders, that I did it all the time. And then I would develop these massive pain in my elbows. And I'm like, what's going on? Like, so I take the bands away, and now the pain is gone. So I think the logic is you're just changing your strength curve, right? You're becoming too strong at one point of the strength curve, and you're kind of neglecting the other part of the strength curve, because your body's got a natural strength curve, which you almost need to stay true to as much as possible. By overloading a different part of the strength curve than maybe we're supposed to too much, maybe it becomes just too much of a strain on your body, and your joints just go, hold on a second here, this is not right, let's have you just maybe manipulate what part of the strength curve you're actually overloading. So obviously, anybody listening, the strength curve on a bench press that gets changed, obviously as that bar gets further away from you, that weight is going to get heavier and heavier and heavier because of the bands. Whereas normally without the band, the bench should start, your hands are furthest away from your joint, or your elbows are, I guess, furthest away from your shoulder joint. So depending on how you want to manipulate your strength curve, just be always be conscious of what part of the exercise is heaviest.
Yep. Great tool, but easy to overdo.
Definitely. And, so one thing I wanted to kind of, you know, mention, you mentioned quickly that, you know, the 3 second or 4 second or 2 second eccentric is completely arbitrary and, you know, out for debate. And I completely agree with that. And I'd always teach a 4 second eccentric just for the exact thing that you said, is learning to eliminate inertia and create tension, because so many people just have no idea how to do that. You know, you and I, John, at our level, can actually probably do, you know, 1 or 2 second eccentric and still put the tension where we want to place it, because we've been doing it for so long and we have such great body control. But average people, you know, you tell them a 4 second eccentric, it ends up being a 2 or 3 second eccentric, and then they lose the tension anyway. So I almost try to, like, err on the side of caution and say, well, you know, do a 4 second, assuming that a 4 second is going to automatically turn into a 3 second, and then maybe they'll learn how to gain control where they're supposed to in the exercise, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of one of the teaching points.
Yeah, and if nothing else, it'll make them use a weight that's manageable.
Yeah, exactly. And one of my best tips, and I mean, John, I'm sure you do some of this stuff, and if you don't, try it, is anything. It's applicable to any exercise. Contract the working muscle before you move. So, you know, obviously we're using the squat example. You go into the bottom of the squat, you stop. And before you try to push back up, you contract your quads and your glutes, because those are the two primary movers in that exercise. So contract your quads and your glutes. Create tension in those by grounding the floor. So I actually imagine like shoving the floor away, and immediately as soon as you do that, you'll feel your quads and your glutes contract. And then before I move, I create tension there, and then I drive through that so that I know those muscles are contracted at the extremes. And I do that on every exercise, whether it be chest or back or arms, whatever it is. The biceps is another really great one. You see these people moving the weight through this range, and there's really no regard for tension or creating tension. But if you can create tension at the extremes of the range, I mean, everybody can contract the muscle in the middle of the range. That's easy. But for great results, you want to try to contract at the extremes of the range and allow it to maintain through the entire movement. Do you ever apply anything like that?
Well, I tell you, I'm a big believer in working different parts of the range of motion, too. I love partials. The partial can be in the stretch position. It can be in the contracted position. I love dead stops, you know. So let's say you're doing rack deadlifts. You know, I would set it down, reposition, boom, drive up. Set it down, reposition. So, you know, I really like to work different parts of the range of motion because it allows you to do things that you can't do just doing a normal rep. It allows you to extend sets, drive more blood in the muscle. There's just so many benefits. I mean, you could list 100 benefits, but that's kind of one of the things I like to do with my training is throw those things in there, those variations, because I think they're really effective.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And I mean, great for developing strength. Obviously, anybody who's even involved with building muscle, there's always a strength component, right? I mean, I think the problem with most men is, you know, they know there needs to be a strength component, but they don't know what degree of it needs to be a strength component. So they overdo the strength component, and they're too concerned with strength. So, you know, one of the things I always try to preach is, like, be very clear on your goal. Do you want to get strong or do you want to get big? And if you typically they can go hand in hand, but, you know, hypertrophy training is obviously very important. Obviously, I believe there should be a component of strength, but what component of a workout, in your opinion, John, needs to be strength when your primary goal is hypertrophy?
Well, I'm a little different than most folks. Most folks will say take your basic movement and do it first, and I think that is one way to do it. But I also think that, you know, when you're practicing progressive overload, which is a good thing, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but if it's your first movement, the fact is we're human beings, we're not machines, and your body, your joints and ligaments will start to break down if you're doing the same movement every single week, adding weight on the bar.
I disagree. I think John Meadows is a machine, but.
Well, maybe an old model Terminator, but not the liquid metal one. But, you know, I mean, I've seen this my whole life. I've seen guys that, and I've done this as well. You know, you go in and you bench first every single time. Then you start having issues with your pec tendons and you know, or you do lying tricep extensions, you know, first in your tricep workout and your elbows start hurting. There's movements that I think that are very basic, that are excellent, but I think they're safer and even more effective, and you can build as much strength. You can just change the sequence. You know, that, you know, this thing about leg curls before squats is a good example. You know, I've had hundreds of people tell me how awesome it works for them, but inevitably there's always somebody that says, well, I'm just too tired when I get to my squats after I do leg curls. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? I mean, is that your conditioning is pathetic if you can't do some leg curls and still squat heavy. And the benefit is your hips are going to feel better, your knees feel better, you have almost this cushion because your hamstrings are pumped up, so you get a little bit more depth, you know, and your weight will start going up once you get in better condition. And when I was over at Louie's, at Westside, Louie would drag a sled before he squatted. He would be out there busting his ass, pulling a sled, and then, you know, somebody inevitably, again, would say, oh, man, I'll get tired if I do that before I squat. And he would say, yeah, you will, but I won't because I'm in shape and you're not. So, you know, I think that, you know, when you can do, the, you know, these larger exercises that tend to put a little more stress on your joints, if you can do them second so your muscle's getting demolished and not your joint, I think you can get even more hypertrophy from it, and I think it's safer. I think safe, being able to do it a long time, and getting more hypertrophy is a pretty good combination. So, you know, I love these basic movements. I love them. I just think that there's a way that you can do them safely that also targets muscle better than just hammering away on your joints and tendons and ligaments.
Man, and now I agree completely, but do you think it's the exact same reasoning as maybe using the bands too often, that we're just overloading one part of the strength curve so much that you're developing a, you know, a wear pattern in the joint or a wear pattern in the I guess the joint somewhere, that,
you know,
is just overdoing it?
That's a good question. And I used to hear people talk about, if you do the same, like, let's say you do squats first, you do the same bar every week, you use the same stance, the same range of motion. I used to hear people talk a lot about this, and their thought was, you're laying down scar tissue and adhesions in a certain pattern that eventually certain muscles will shut off, others will take over, there's an overcompensation. Now, I'm not smart enough to know if that's true or not. I have no idea. But it does seem like, anecdotally, you know, if you change the bar, like maybe you go to a safety squat bar, if you change your stance, it does seem to me, and I think this is pretty logical, that you're going to work different parts of the muscle and you're going to have better balance, and that's got to be a good thing. I mean, again, I don't know that, you know, laying down, you know, adhesions in a certain area, I don't know if that's true or not, but it would certainly seem like varying your stance or other things like that would create a more balanced strength, and you'd have less chance of overcompensation than the injuries that can follow afterwards. That's just my uneducated view on that.
Sure, man. I mean, you know, just like you know, the analogy we used of using the band too much, I really think that you can do anything too much, man. You wear patterns in the joints, just over getting too strong at one part of the strength curve, and it becomes disproportionate to the other parts of the strength curve, and thereby your body just going to be out of whack. There's going to be malalignments, right? And there's going to be strength gradients. So I think always just making sure you're rotating at least every 4 weeks what you're doing. I usually suggest every 6 weeks. And again, I do believe, I mean, 6 weeks is kind of a cusp. It's kind of like any longer than this is too long. You know, I think there's some research on that suggests, you know, that's the optimal amount of time to adapt to any training program, whatever. But, I mean, that's always subjective, right? So, but that's from what I've seen. I usually suggest 6 week, 4 to 6 week programs, changing it every 4 to 6 weeks, just so that you avoid that. And like you said, you just balance out your body and make sure you're hitting it from every different angle to avoid those wear patterns in the joints and strength gradients in the strength curve.
Yep.
Awesome. So now this is the ultimate question, man. How do you build John Meadows-sized legs? What's the mindset? I think at the end of the day, I mean, you can tell me if you agree. The difference between you and I and someone who's maybe, you know, not a world-class bodybuilder but trying to get there, what's the difference? I would suggest it's mindset. I mean, I really believe that if you put me in front of any situation and I'm training with any other bodybuilder and it's in a competitive environment, there's no way I'm quitting. There's no way that I'm going to get – I could go against Ronnie Coleman, and clearly Ronnie's stronger than me and bigger than me, and I just wouldn't quit. And that's just my mentality. And I think at the end of the day, being successful at this stuff comes down to being really meticulous with your execution and just busting your balls. What do you think are the main factors, man, between, you know, you and I and the people who are striving to be where we are?
Well, okay, so when I saw Tom Platz back when I was a youngster in my teenage, that seminar I was talking about, people asked him, they said, Tom, what do you do for your legs? Do you do heavy weight for low reps, or do you do high weight, or do you do low weight for high reps, or do you do heavy weight for low reps? And I'll never forget his response. He said, I do heavy weight for high reps. And he said, if you're doing heavy weight for high reps, I can guarantee you you're training with the intensity that you need to grow. And I never forgot that. And, you know, I was always trying to work up to heavy weights when I squatted, but I was also trying to push the reps up. And to do that, like, you know, on a leg press, for example, you know, we would use something like, say, 900, which was pretty heavy, you know, for us back in the day. But we'd say, all right, we're going to find a way to dig down deep and get 40 reps with this. And, you know, we might have had to stop at 20, 25, 27, 28, 29, 30 to get it, but we got it. And, you know, you can only do that so long, that's true, but I think most people just can't take themselves to do that mentally. They might be able to do it if they have the right person training with them, but to take high reps with a heavy weight takes a certain mindset. It takes a killer instinct, and quite frankly, you got to be a little nutty, you know? I mean, when I was doing legs at Worlds back in the 90s, people all they would just say, you're nuts. You're just crazy. You're doing way too much. And these guys all had, you know, back then my legs had gotten up to 30 inches. And, there's, you know, I said, well, you know, your legs are small and mine aren't. So, but, you know, my point is I think you're right with mindset. And there's a deep level of passion about training that you have to do that over a long period of time. I mean, anybody can watch a Rocky movie and go train their ass off. But can you year after year after year train your ass off? I mean, I'm trying to do stuff now that I was doing in my 20s. That's how hard I'm trying to push. And it's because I love it. I enjoy it. I don't dread. I don't walk in there and say, man, I'm going to see how many reps I can do with 315 today. I'm fired up. I get in there, and when that shit starts burning, I'm trying to think of a way. Now, how in the hell am I going to get another 5 or 10 reps? And to me, that's a large part of what can take somebody from being good to really, really, really good.
Man, and for me, it started really young and being inspired by a guy like Tom Platz and looking at him and going, I didn't get the opportunity to meet him like you did, but, I guess it kind of happened in my mind is what sets him apart? Why is he great? And why are his legs so much better than everybody else? And why is he able to push himself so much harder? And it's almost like you say, you're almost a little mentally unstable. It's like a turn on, turn off type thing. But I think it's a chip on your shoulder, man. It's the type of thing like people, I don't know what it was for you, but for me it was people saying, you might laugh at this now, but the two things I got from everyone when I was young is, I was aspiring to be a bodybuilder. I was 18 years old. People said, you have no sweep in your quads and your shoulders aren't wide enough. Those are the two comments I got all the time. I didn't get like your arms are too small, your back isn't big enough. I got your shoulders are too narrow and your legs have no sweep, which is comical to hear now, but it just kind of gave me a chip on my shoulder and I kind of threw my middle finger in the air and I said, F everybody, I'm going to do this. And you develop this chip on your shoulder. And every time I got in the leg press, my goal is I don't want to beat you. I want to do twice as many as you. I'm going to bury you. I'm not just going to, beat you. That's not what my mindset is. And that's the way my mindset is even now when I train with somebody, one of my competitors, is like, I'm not trying to beat you. I'm trying to make you leave here knowing that I'm the man and you're going to be laying on the floor telling all your buddies that Ben's the man. I just can't keep up with that guy. And no matter how hard it is for me, I'm never going to show it. I'm never going to let you see that I'm tired. Like, I've kind of taken on that reputation, especially when I go train at Gold's, is I'm just going to do my best and I'm going to make it look easy. And, that's wherever your motivation comes from, you just got to kind of want to have that desire to be better than everybody else, especially to get to the elite level in anything. I mean, for me, I was a good athlete, but I never had a great physique when I was a kid. I was never particularly strong. I just had this desire that like, hey, if somebody else can do this, I can do it. There's no reason that these people are better than me. There's no reason that I can't accomplish every single thing that anybody else in the world can. And I think that is what has allowed me to, and if you ask me, I don't think I've accomplished anything in my life yet, but I'm on my way. So, I think that's what sets you apart, man. It's all a mindset thing. Anybody can do a squat, anybody can do a leg press, but doing those things that other people aren't willing to do, that sets you and I apart.
Well, I got to a point years and years ago where I really started to realize the value of time and missed opportunity. And if I did a workout and I'd left and I knew that I could have pushed harder, I would feel guilty and I would be pissed off. And chances were good I'd go back in and do more. And when you pushed yourself, and when you don't push yourself, that's not acceptable. And I tell you a great example of that is Dave Tate. Dave, I can't tell you how many times over the last couple of years we've trained, will send me a note and say, well, I did this, this, and this, but I know I had a lot left in the tank. So I went back in 2 hours later and did this, this, and this. So, but it just goes back to your mindset. Once you push your body a certain way and your body can handle it, your body adapts any stress. So you've got it. If it's used to training hard, you're going to have to do something pretty crazy to keep getting better and better. And, of course, we have our structured times where we back down. But when we got everything kicked into high gear, you better leave knowing that you've given it your all.
So I think everyone wants to hear, what's your number one leg workout for growth, or what's the craziest thing you've ever done in a leg workout, as far as hardest and most ridiculous to believe and achieve, and looking back at it, you find it hard to believe you did it.
Well, you know, there's never going to be anything harder than drop sets on squats for me. I mean, that is always the epitome of just suffering. And, you know, we've done a lot of drop sets over the years, and, you know, we've put chains on the bar, took the chains off, then took weight off, to the point where, you know, we could barely even stand up with 135 pounds. But I would say the workouts that have been just the most painful and excruciating have been, and probably in the last couple of years, because we've done a lot of work to kind of already tear up our quads. Like on the leg press, we might do 30s and 40s, and then we do those squats where we work up to a heavy weight and then do a drop set. And, you know, those, to me, those have been the most brutal workouts, going into a squat already in pain, but then pulling out a high intensity technique. You know, we have these sets we call challenge sets, and we'll typically do one or two a workout. And those challenge sets are the sets where you put it, you leave it all on the table. And, you know, we've done a lot of those where we were flat on our back for a good while. You know, probably not something that everybody needs to do to grow, but, you know, when you get to a certain level, those kinds of things make a difference. Now, if I was going to tell somebody, you know, what are some of the keys to growing, what I would say now, you know, maybe what I think now will change in a year, but what I think now is I do really, really starting leg workouts with leg curl variations, and it can be standing, it can be seated, it can be lying. I really like putting a lot of focus on hamstrings first and having it not be an afterthought. And, you know, a lot of the guys that I work with, their hamstrings look vastly different. They hang a lot lower, for example, in their side chest pose from using this sequence. So generally speaking, I'm not always going to do this, but generally speaking, I like to start with a leg curl variation. And then I like to move into a basic movement like a squat or a leg press, where we really, you know, we like to use some weight. Sometimes we're going to train them real explosively, maybe with some lower reps. Sometimes we're going to do what I call grinder sets, which is just when you're just trying to, it takes everything you can to get 8 or 10 reps. So I think you do a leg curl variation. I think you do a basic. It could be a squat or a leg press. And then I think, you know, if you throw in, people are a little afraid of isolation movements, but, you know, a lot of times an isolation movement can be a good finisher. And, you know, then you can do, once you've got into ball busting work, then you can do some pump work. You know, it could be anything. It could be hack squats. It could be lunges. It could be leg extensions. If you squatted, it could just be then going to the leg press. You know, pumping the muscle until the skin feels like it's going to tear. That's one of the cool things about, you know, some of the science stuff is what we've really known anecdotally through thousands of bodybuilders over the years. We know the pump can help facilitate growth, and it's nice to see some science coming out now and showing, oh, there's absolutely validity to this.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things that I've heard is that some of the difference between the size of a bodybuilder and a powerlifter is actually slow twitch muscle fibers are more developed in bodybuilders. And even though they don't have the capacity to grow like a, you know, like a fast twitch muscle fiber, they still have a capacity to grow and can contribute to the kind of the fullness and volume look that bodybuilders get. Now, I know a lot of that's genetic, but that's just, it's just an interesting thought, and it makes you think that, yeah, there absolutely is value in doing some of these higher reps. So then I'd probably finish with a stiff leg variation then. You know, you get your hamstrings, they're loaded full of blood, you're real tight. So then you can kind of use this as a dual purpose, stretch out your hamstring, but also it's still a good basic movement that put, you know, some meat on your hamstrings. And if you come up all the way and use your glutes, you can use your glutes. But, you know, really, if you just put that those four things together, you should be able to grow in terms of, you know, that should be the right training stimulus.
Definitely. That's great, man. I mean, that's literally, you couldn't ask for much more than that. Yeah, personally, I used a lot of lunges in my youth, but only for the fact that I feel as though it allowed me to not get major strength gradients from one leg to the other, which I find is a huge problem in bodybuilding because we all have messed up hips and backs, so you end up loading one leg more than the other. So I'd like to do a lot of lunges. And it also allowed me to really focus on the contraction. I mean, if you can't do a lunge with substantial amount of weight, you're probably not going to be able to control a squat very well. So I was a big fan of lunging growing up. But I literally had two exact workouts that I follow week in, week out. And each week I'd start with leg curls, like you say, lying leg curls. And I'd probably do about eight sets because I found it was that much to get a great pump and make sure that the muscles were starting to get that level of fatigue. It's the point I call the critical drop-off. Where, like, you know, you're strong, you're strong, you're strong, and then you kind of crap out. It can be different every week depending on your caloric intake and depending on a number of different factors. You know, 1 week it may be four sets, 1 week it may be 10 sets, but that point where I feel like I've peaked at my strength and my workload, and then it stays there, and then drops off. And then I'm like, okay, now my joints are warmed up, my body temperature is up enough to go squat. And each week it was either exactly these workouts. It was squat, back squats, leg press, leg extensions, or it was front squats, hack squat, leg extensions. And that was literally those three exercises every week in that order, and we just alternated back and forth. And obviously we changed rep schemes and we changed foot positions and stuff. But literally that's all I did. And, you know, front squats with hack squat and leg extensions, or back squats with leg press and leg extensions. And what else can I possibly do? And sometimes we'll change the order. You know, sometimes we do leg extensions first and then, you know, or we reverse it or something. But essentially it was always those combinations, and I just loved it. I mean, I was a huge fan of front squats. Works extremely well for my body structure, even better than back squats, I think.
That was it, man. Nothing special. Just, you know, being very meticulous and trying to outwork what I did the previous week, you know, each week 1% better.
Well, all those 1% add up over a year, 5 years, and 10 years, you know.
So here's a question for you, man. What would you say to me? I'm your client. I'm going to sign up with you today. What would you say to me on how I need to improve my legs? What should I be doing? Just the same things you're telling me, just be very specific with the leg curls, and or is there something you can tell me at my level to get even better?
Well, at your level, you've already handled, you can handle a lot of stress, a lot of intensity, and, you know, if someone at your level development, it's going to take something a little extra special, some of those challenge sets to really really, really dig down deep, man, get every high threshold motor unit, get every angle of hypertrophy you can, you know, whether it's sarcoplasmic hypertrophy or myofibrillar hypertrophy. I believe in both, by the way, and not just myofibrillar hypertrophy. You're just going to have, I mean, to me, it's going to have to be training intensity and just finding ways to literally obliterate your muscle. And I know that doesn't sound like an intelligent, well-thought-out response, but I think with a guy like you, your legs are already so good. You can structure shit as good as you want, but if there's not a supreme level of intensity, your body's going to say, oh, I've seen this before. I can handle this. I don't really need to adapt or do anything different.
Yeah, I completely agree, man. I mean, once you get to the point where your execution is perfect, now it's all about just upping the intensity. I mean, there's no other route, right? I mean, you can manipulate you can manipulate volume and density and stuff, but I mean, ultimately, it's just going to come down to biting down and giving it your all.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The further you get along that spectrum, the more that comes into play. Yeah.
The one thing that I actually do that you and I discussed last year when you were getting ready for your show briefly is just pre-exhaust, man. I mean, muscle activation prior to, you know, the prime example being, you know, people are like, oh, my glutes aren't coming in, or my glutes aren't really developed. Why not try pre-exhausting your glutes, or at least activating them prior to squatting or prior to training your legs? You know, my glutes, I think, are a weakness as far as that's kind of maybe not being, they're always usually pretty good shape, but I wish they were a little bit bigger. So pre-exhaust or at least activate them so that you know that they're going to become a prime mover in that exercise. I mean, some people that can squat and have absolutely no glute development, and then you get other people who squat and get this massive squatting ass. And I guess the difference being one person's body, those muscles are active, and the other person's body, it's just not. So,
right.
You know, turning those muscles on before doing it, I think, makes a big, big difference. So that's it for that, man. Any other thoughts and insights on leg day training?
Well, the only other thing I would say is I do have people who have, you know, kind of conquered Curry workout nutrition, thereby made their recovery as good as possible, add in a second leg day during the week. But those days are different in structure. They're not heavy grinding work. They're not drop sets. Those are all left to the base workout. You know, some different movements, most of them done explosively. So it's just a way to increase workload. I hear people talk about, well, you can squat every day or four times a week. Well, maybe you can, but not at the intensity that we're talking about during this base leg workout. You know?
Right.
So with a lot of people, I do add in that second leg day, but it's drawn up very carefully so you don't, you know, trash your body. Leg training is it's meant to be difficult. It should be difficult. So these are a little different, more pump style in nature and pumping and explosive type movements, but nothing where we grind. So that's another thing that I think can help people. And work on different muscles, you know, like you said, glutes, you can work on your adductors. You can add in some stuff on that day that maybe you didn't get in on the base day. And, you know, that can only, like you said, that can only help. So.
Yeah. Maybe like in an attempt to educate people and instruct them on when and how often would you suggest using like fast reps versus slow reps? Because I know everybody's sitting at home right now going, this is all great information, but how do I apply it? So, you know, is there a certain percentage of the time you use fast and certain percentage of the time you use slow, or does it just come down to, like, obviously the level of the trainee and their ability to maintain tension and control, or do you kind of have a plan that you take as far as an approach?
Well, I think two things come into play here. Two things jump out at me. Number one, the body part. And number two is the exercise. So body parts, what I mean by that is I'm never going to have somebody do explosive barbell curls. I don't see the need to curl a bar up as fast as you can curl it. I don't see the value in that. I don't see the value in doing a tricep push down with ultra high speed and just driving it down the lockout as fast as you can. Some body parts, I think, it's just not the right way to train them. I just don't think it is. Now, take a squat, for example, doing explosive squats where you're pushing your knees out and you're driving up really hard, trying to just activate, just produce as much tension as you can, as not just the factor of the weight, but also with speed or force. I should say force, I think is very good. So, you know, you've got certain body parts, and another one would be something like back. Now, I'm not going to do a 3-second eccentric on back. You know, if I'm doing a dumbbell row, I'm not going to take 3 seconds to lower the dumbbell. In my opinion, that's going to, your biceps and shoulders are going to start burning, and you actually lose tension off your lats. But, you know, these are the kind of these intuitive things that when you been in this sport a long time and you really think about what you're doing, you kind of figure it out. It's like doing a slow dumbbell row has no benefit at all. Now if you're doing a deadlift, then, you know, again, there's a lot of different approaches you could take. You can drive it up very explosively like you do a squat, which I like to do. I really enjoy that. But a deadlift is another one where you probably don't want to take a heavy deadlift and lower it with a 3-second count or So you've got certain exercises that lend themselves to being able to explode, like a squat or a deadlift, an incline barbell bench press. You know, the theme is typically it's a lot of compound movements. You've got certain exercises that from the eccentric part of it work a little better than others. In certain body parts, like your arms, I think you want to just concentrate on squeezing and forcing blood in the muscle as opposed to going up real fast. So there's, I guess, no real answer, Ben. I wish I had a scientific way of saying that this muscle is 70% fast twitch, this one's 30%. But
right.
I think it just comes down to you find exercises where it feels right to maybe slow it down, and some exercises it feels wrong to do that. And the same thing with speed. It feels right to drive something up and explode with it. As long as the muscle driving the weight and you're not bouncing. A rack deadlift is a good example. You do the deadlift, you set it down, you reposition, you get tight, and boom, ram it up again. So that's kind of how I look at it, Ben. It just depends on the exercise and the body part.
And this is really cool, man. I actually love this topic because, you know, obviously you and I are going to hopefully train together in the next couple of weeks. And as we planned originally in Vegas, but didn't really happen, we're going to do, if I come down, I don't know, 2 or 3 days or 4 days, whatever it is, maybe we'll do 2 workouts Mountain Dog style, and we'll do 2 workouts in my 40 style, because there's certain things that I think I can show you that may change your opinion on that. And don't get me wrong, like, obviously you know what you're talking about, but I may be able to make some minor tweaks that I figured out that I'm like, oh, I can actually slow this down and make it feel better here, or I can speed this up and make it feel better there. So, you know, you and I are coming from completely different places and completely different backgrounds, so I'm sure you can be able to teach me a ton. And there may be little things that I can go, I'll try this, and you may actually be able to feel certain exercises. So I'm actually really looking forward to that, because it's going to be a whole, like, 2 different perspectives completely, right? My perspective on slow and fast training is, if I'm training for strength, I want it to be completely explosive, high motor neuron recruitment, all that stuff. But when I'm training for hypertrophy, I like the idea of going at a fast enough speed that I'm able to aggressively contract the muscle, but I'm not trying to move it so fast that I lose control at the end. So
yeah.
You're probably in the same boat mentally, but that's kind of a hard thing for most people to conceptualize. Like when I say, you know, I want you to be explosive, usually there's, for 99 people out of 100, they're going to lose tension at the end of the range. That's why, I mean, it's hard to really teach people that. You and I, at our level, we can go, okay, we're going to do this really explosively, and yet we're still able to maintain tension, not be smashing our joints, you know, at the end range like you would do on a tricep pushdown or something like that. We can still maintain tension where we want to place it. But average people saying do it explosively, I think it's just reckless because, like, they have no idea what they're doing. So, you know, I'm looking forward to training, man. I'm really excited about it. And let's just make a plan ahead of time to, 2 workouts in my 40 style, 2 workouts Mountain Dog style, and we'll just film them. You know, you put me through them, I'll put you through them, and I think we'll learn some really cool stuff, and it'll be really good information for other people to, for you to teach me and make tweaks to my training, and then I can show you some stuff that I think may be able to tweak your training a little bit. So that's going to be really exciting for me.
Sounds awesome. As long as I don't have to do heavy barbell curls, I'm happy.
Heavy, explosive barbell curls with massive amounts of shoulder flexion.
Exactly.
All right, man, that was awesome. We kind of stuck with the leg topic, which I think is really, really valuable for a lot of people. Most people don't have a clue. One other thing I want to say that has made a difference to me, this is the question I wanted to ask you. This is valuable for me to know what you're thinking about when you're squatting. What are the little intricacies that, you know, what are the specifics you're focusing on? What are the intricacies you're thinking about when you're squatting?
Well, you know, it used to be dropping down and getting deep, and it was more of a bodybuilding, narrower stance style. And then I trained with all these powerlifters for a while, and it was get out wide and get your hips back. So, you know, in my head, the whole time I'm descending, I'm thinking, get your hips back, get your hips back. It's a little different now. I actually think I went overboard with sitting back, and I think I created probably too much stress on my lower lumbar. I think I took it too far. And
yep.
So I don't sit back quite as hard now as I was. And my stance is probably medium. You know, it's probably like it's not a powerlifting wide stance, but it's not a narrow bodybuilding stance. It's somewhere in between. When I'm going down, it's just more control the speed, control the weight, keep the muscle tight, keep your whole body tight, actually,
right.
Especially your spine, keep your chest up, you know, all those basic things that people should be doing. And then when I drive up, I'm trying to drive up forcefully. I'm trying to drive up with some power and some strength. And I don't typically lock out because, again, and going back to that tension thing, I want to get to about three-quarter lockout, and I want to start going right back down. I don't want tension to go anywhere. I want it to stay on the muscle. So I'm thinking, you know, control the descent, feel the muscle lower in the weight. Don't just drop. The dive bomb is what we call it in powerlifting. Sometimes people would dive bomb and, you know, say, well, that's how you properly use the stretch reflex. Well, that's great, but I don't know it's going to build huge legs.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's control the weight, feel the muscle lowering the weight, drive up really hard, but don't lock it out and lose tension on the muscle. I'd say those are kind of the main things that go through my head as I execute a squat.
So here's a really cool insight for you that I got about 3 months ago, and it may actually give you some perspective on, you know, driving your hips back and, you know, really getting that anterior tilt in your hips. So every muscle, as you know, is strongest in its midpoint in the range, right? Like that's pretty simple logic. It's weak at its extremes and it's strong in the middle.
Right.
If you do your pelvic tilt, so if you were to do an anterior pelvic tilt, which like really sticking your butt out, and do a posterior pelvic tilt as far as it can go, you know, really kind of thrusting your hips forward, both going all the way forward and all the way back, and feel where that is, and then find the point that's right in the middle of the two, then you know that muscle is in the midpoint of its range, and it's going to be likely to be strongest there, right? So as opposed to like shoving those muscles in your hips to being extreme parts of the range where they're like going to be shortened and thereby weakened, likely giving you the likelihood of causing a little bit of tension where you don't want it, try to find that midpoint of the range and you'll feel it there. And that way, you know, those muscles, your hips are optimally working because they're in the midpoint of the range.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, I mean, as opposed to shoving all the way back.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I'm pretty sure I just started going overboard and pushing my hips back too hard. You know?
Yeah.
Which when I was powerlifting, that wasn't even a possibility. There's no such thing as pushing your hips back too hard.
Right,
know?
Right.
But
again, you don't know if that's right or wrong. I mean, obviously powerlifters have been doing it for a long time, and it's probably trying to shorten the range somehow by decreasing the amount of knee flexion, you know, getting hips really far back. I mean, I don't know enough about powerlifting to even make a point, but maybe they would be stronger if they were in the middle of the range. I mean, I don't know enough about analyzing movement of a strength trained athlete, but, you know, logic says that if you're in the middle of the range, that's where you're strongest, so you may want to try to stay somewhere in that range. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm sure Dave Tate would know a heck of a lot more about that than I do. My thoughts when I'm training legs, tension, man, that's it. It's like the only one thing is I'm trying to create tension at the extremes and, you know, keep my posture right, keep my head straight, don't allow my head to dip, and keep continuous tension. And there's nothing more important to me when I'm training legs than making sure it's continuous and optimal. Like, obviously, as soon as you let that tension relax, you're going to lose that blood flow. You're going to lose that metabolic buildup, the buildup of the metabolites. That's my goal is just increase the cell swelling as much as possible and really squeeze the heck out of that muscle. All right, John, I think we're going a little over our time limit here, man, so we'll wrap it up. Buddy, an amazing opportunity to chat with you. It's always great to chat. And anything you want to say in closing, maybe send some people to your website where they can get some more great info from you?
Oh, yeah, sure. MountainDogDiet.com is the website, and I have a subscriber site for it's about $9 a month, and I have some really, really good PhDs that write for me. There's an advanced nutrition section that we put a really good article out every month. There's an article of interest that could be about anything, really. Probably the most popular part of my website is I have an In the Trenches section where every month I talk about how I prepped a competitor. Most of them are pros. Some of them are not. But it's it's very, very detailed, and it takes you through everything they ate, every change we made from start to finish. And, you know, so it's pretty popular. And I have a workout of the month every month so people can sample the training style, see if they like it. There are workouts that I pull right out of my programs, and also have a Q&A section. People, when they sign up, I answer their emails within reason. And also I do interviews, and, you know, I've had some really, really bright people over the years that I do interviews with. It's kind of a combination of PhDs, you know, that are in the field and that have they're kind of in the trenches with us most of the time. It's not all theoretical. It's people that actually train too. And then also sometimes I get competitors that, you know, I just did an interview with Mike Francois, who's a good friend of mine. But generally, I like for those interviews to be people that, you know, people like John Ivey, we did a nutrient timing interview on, you know, people like Jeff Volek, but if people wanted to hear about what his thoughts on low carbs, because he's wrote so many books about it, but just, you know, a little bit deeper perspective. So yeah, thanks for letting me mention that, Ben. That's the website. You go there and check it out.
Hey, Matt, it's definitely worth your time. I'm actually a paying member who's in there from time to time reading this great stuff John's putting out, so you guys should definitely check it out. And thank you very much for checking out our podcast, and hopefully we see you guys again very, very soon. John, thanks again, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Talk again soon.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Stay connected on Facebook / IFBB Ben PAK fan page, on Twitter at IFBB Ben PAK, and of course, BenPakulski.com.